Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of Spadories.
The Dories, we are back.
So today we just to talk about, I was telling Bailey before we got on the call about how I ran into somebody that we used to work with, and I was super proud kind of what that person was doing in the district that they are currently in. And so we were just thinking about maybe talking about some people that we used to work with and maybe some of the things that they're implementing in their department, whether it's at a new district or the same district, and just kind of highlighting some good work that's happening here in the good old state of Texas. So Bailey, do you want to start or do you want me to?
Gosh, there's a couple people that I can think of. I'll start with my first person and then you can go
Okay.
into yours. Then we can tag in. And I appreciate the fact that we are talking about some of the good things that happened in Texas, because I think also there are times where we're like, everything's terrible. And it's not. There's some really great stuff happening here, which I think is super exciting and just so wonderful to see. So one of the people that I used to work with, this was in my previous district as well. But really, in our program. So in Texas, and I know I've explained this before, but a quick recap for deaf education services, because it's such a low incidence disability, and because you're looking at very high costs related to like interpreting and just language, and even just finding teachers of the deaf, they typically will have school districts basically come up with a shared service arrangement where like multiple school districts are putting money in to the same program or the same supports to go ahead and like provide services for deaf and hard of hearing students, right? So one of my really good friends actually had previously, she was the manager, supervisor, et cetera, in one of the school districts that we partnered with. And she just, so her big focus of support was really like, you typically see that many students, regardless of the fact that they have a disability or not, graduate high school with like maybe max a sixth grade reading level, right? Like it was just literacy is a struggle in general for education. And so one of the things that she really focused on in her program was like, I am going to ensure these deaf and hard of hearing students can read and write and have good literacy because it's just such a big deal. And the challenge is like when you think about teaching someone how to read and someone how to, pronounce words and stuff and what those words mean, there's so much of that that involves your hearing, right? Like phonemic awareness and your fluency, your articulation, all these things that you're like, it plays such a huge impact when it comes to reading. And so hearing or lack of hearing is going to impact your ability to do that. So what I really loved about her was she did this entire steering committee to identify a appropriate literacy program, an appropriate intervention that should be implemented with specifically deaf and hard of hearing students to increase their literacy skills. So this was back in, gosh, high end, 2019, probably. And the last time I talked to her, which was last year around this time, so it's been a minute. She came here for a deaf blind conference, but we met up to grab drinks and we were talking about this literacy program. And she was like, Bailey, the consistent use and making sure it's going on. She's like, our kiddos are reading like one grade level behind, which is huge in terms of where they were before. I'm not going to shout out the
Yeah.
academic program because I don't even know if I can do that, to be honest.
Yeah.
I don't know. But it was so impressive that I came back to my current district and I was like, hey, this literacy program is what she was using for our deaf and hard of hearing students in this other district. And I was like, we struggle a lot, and I think many people struggle a lot for like what intervention program or literacy support do you put in place for students who don't have dyslexia? Because there's like a ton for kiddos that have dyslexia, but where is it for kiddos that don't? So we basically pulled this curriculum. We met with the company. We did all this stuff and actually ended up getting it for our deaf and hard of hearing students too, which I think is so cool.
Yeah.
And now we're like tracking it in our own district. And I was telling her, I was like, this is amazing. And everyone needs to know about this. And we need to tell all the people. So they even presented on it at, I'm pretty sure she presented on it at the statewide conference for the deaf, which was not last summer, but the summer before, because it's every 2 years, or maybe I don't remember. It's every year. I don't know. But so she presented on it, and now there's like tons of at least deaf ed programs that are using this because of like what they saw this program do and how it worked. And I'm just like, girl, you're amazing. Look at you. Right. It's been so cool to see.
Oh, I love that. That makes me so happy.
I know.
That's, I mean, like, I feel like people that are do that. I always had this, this mom who, when I was at the previous private school that I was at, she'd always say, I feel like you guys are doing like the Lord's work. And I would always giggle about that, but man, like some people, I just feel like we're meant to do that and help other people. And I just think that's wonderful. I really do.
Yeah.
Right.
And literacy is such a big deal. It's just like,
I mean, it's life without it.
Yeah. All I do all day, every day is like read things. I don't know. Like it's just so big. So I love it. I'm so impressed with her.
Oh, I love that so much. And where did you say she's now? Like just another.
She's still in that same program. She recently, so she had, while I was still in the program, she had her first kiddo. And then she recently, about a year ago, had her second. So she's like, really, I want to keep doing what I'm doing. And also like right now there's so much stability in this for my family. She's like, I'm not looking to be a director or an ED or an assistant. She's like, I'm totally fine just managing the deaf ed program. And I'm like, okay, that's great. And so she's like happy. She's found her little niche and she's like, that's what I want.
Yeah. And I think that's great though, because sometimes like it's so hard to leave something that you're so good at, and if somebody else came in, like would it still be the same level of impact and services? So sometimes it's hard to go, so good for her for seeing it through. That's hard. I love that. Okay, so I was telling Bailey before I got on the call, I saw an old coworker that her and I both know, and I feel like we kind of all started at the same time, right? As program specialists or senior managers or whatever, we kind of started at the same time. So it's kind of cool to see transformation. We talked in our solar eclipse episode about transformation. And we also talked about, you specifically talked about transition and how we feel like we needed to do more for students. And it's funny because I think in public schools, like people will hear this. I don't know if it's called this in other states, but are all the self-contained classrooms called life skills, or do you know?
I don't think so. I don't know that it's called that in every state.
Right. Okay. So that's something that I want to kind of, I guess we should explore further, but so in Texas, we have some self-contained units that are called life skill units, for students that are severely disabled or like intellectually disabled. And I think based on just the name, it makes sense to think that you're teaching them life skills, you would think. But the great thing about the person that I ran into is now he is, I would say, the head guy in charge of his special education department in the district that he's at. And he was just telling me, we talked for such a long time, but he was just telling me all the wonderful work that he was doing and showed me some pictures of a project that he had. So in his district, I think there's one high school, and he was able to get the school district to pay for a tiny home to be built behind the high school.
So cool. Showed
me pictures. I was telling Bailey, it looks kind of just like an Airbnb. It was so nice. It was like a one bedroom apartment. It had all of the appliances, washer and dryer. And he said, you know, it's meant to teach life skills. You know, I think a lot of parents would say that eventually they would want their child to be able to live independently. And so that is such a huge skill, to be able to live in a one bedroom apartment. I mean, of course, they're not going to be like sleeping there through the day or whatnot, it's teaching them to learn how to lock up and to clean and to wash dishes and do the laundry and all of those things. And so I just thought it was really cool. And I was so impressed with how much he talked about it and how, like, for him, he even said, like, this is like my passion project. I just think it's so vital that we're teaching necessary skills for our students to succeed outside of school. Oh. And I just thought it was so cool. And, you know, we started talking about how the district that we're in is so big that it's hard. That would be so hard to be able to, hey, we're going to build a tiny home behind that high school. He would have had to run through several different
hoops. Chains of command and hoops. It probably would never have happened.
Right. And it's just, he was like, it's just so much easier in sometimes smaller districts to feel like I'm making such an impact. And I would agree, like, starting off small, and it's not like that district is not going to ever grow, you know, in a couple of years, they might, he even said they've doubled in size.
Oh, wow.
A couple of years. So, I mean, you can see, you know, one high school and then maybe another, and then it's just going to continue to boom. And it's really not even far out from Houston, which is even crazier to me.
Right.
I think, but
it's like a suburb kind of.
Right. Yes. But I was telling him, like, I was so proud of, like, him just doing that in general and going through the process to advocate for the students, and how, like, watch him be in a couple of years, like, be the model school for transition. Mm-hmm. And he was like, that would be like a dream of mine. And I was like, and I can see it happening, because, like, who else is building tiny homes
outside of high schools?
Right. Behind. Yeah. So that was a kudos to him. I was really,
I love that.
Yeah. It made me really happy. And I feel like, again, he's like, we talked a lot about, like, just previous leadership and things that changed and whatnot, and like how we were so similar in our thought process. But it's funny because he was a person of, like, little words, I felt like, you know, mm-hmm. like he would never ever truly say what was going, you know, until he left, which of course is professional. But yeah, it was just really good to see him. And I was, again, like, super proud of, like, the work he was doing. And
I love that.
I just think it's people like that that make a difference. And then we talked about, like, his mentor and how he felt like his mentor really prepared him for that specifically, which I thought was really cool. And we talked about early childhood. Kid you not, this is like the universe coming together, because remember in our last episode, we talked about how early childhood and how, like, I would love to see, like, when I was in grad school,
we had pre-K.
Yeah. And, like, it was typically developing kids and then atypical. He said that that's the model that they do there as well.
Love that.
No, I was like, oh,
this is what we need.
Little Mel. I was like, are you hiring? No, just kidding.
Yeah, sign me up. Well, yeah, it's so interesting too, because I think, like, I look back at the time that we were in our previous district, and there was a ton going on, right? It was just, like, crazy and overwhelming, and, like, we don't ever have to really get into that on this podcast. It was a lot. But what I also remember was, like, there were so many people in that district that I'm like, man, I learned this, like, transition, you're the person I'm going to go to for transition. Yes. Early childhood, you. Speech, you. And, like, you kind of, for the people that, like, really knew or were, like, dedicated and set on, like, supporting kids, supporting staff, supporting the work, there was so much that I learned from the other people I was working with about special education, about services, about families, about interacting with, like, it was so good. And so being able to take those skills and move it to a new district, and kind of, like, to his credit, being able to say, like, hey, my mentor focused a lot on transition and highlighted for that, that piece. Like, we are going to support transition. And then, like, I know with his family and his own kids, he's like, we're going to focus on early childhood because that's a, like, direct impact. Not that you're not also doing all the other things, you are, but it's kind of cool to be able to see, like, these passion projects be taken into new places and really see, like, student growth, you know? Yeah. And I think that's so cool about working in that kind of large district setting, because then you can, like, take it to another smaller district or another district in general and be like, yeah, this is how we're going to implement that here. And I think it's so cool to see it.
You know, something that you even said too about how, like, we learn so much from people. It's funny because even when we're in our different districts and we're surrounded by different people, there are certain people, you being one of them, not just because we do, like, the podcast. I feel like even before we started the podcast, you were my person to answer any deaf and hard of hearing question. And, like, it was like, Bailey, Tell me I'm not. And like, but then it also expanded to like, obviously special education and like more than just deficit of hearing. But I felt like we were able to like pocket people like, hey, you're my person, even though we do not work together anymore.
Right.
I need you to tell me what this is about. And like, I feel like it's funny because this particular person had reached out to me and that's how we kind of like were able to like meet up and stuff. And he was like, hey, like if you're ever looking to do evaluations, like please let me know, like you will always have a job here. And it's just,
I love that.
Yeah, like I think it's just really nice to know that like you've made impact and people respect your knowledge content. Like it's not like you're a know-it-all, but they respect you for knowing special education and going and being your go-to person. But I feel like we have a lot of go-to people. Like I think about Roz would be a question I would ask, and you're in those chats where I'm like, Roslyn, is this right? And she's like,
is this normal?
No. I'm like, just making sure. But it's nice because, yeah, we don't ever see each other. I mean, of course, we see each other virtually, but it's nice to have that person to go to. Yeah, it is really cool.
I love it. And I do think that those connections too, like only, I feel like it only helps strengthen my practice and also like what I learn, right? Like kind of like you were saying, like you're my speech person. Like Roz is my LSSP. I've got like various people for like PD instruction, transition, you know, and it's like, especially because I think one thing that we as educators should constantly challenge ourselves to do, because I hear this a lot, even in my current district, is like, well, that's not how we do it. That's not how it's done here. And I'm like, okay, I get it. Cause like we have IDEA, we have the legal framework. We have the Texas legal framework. And so it's like, we take these and we interpret that legal framework and we put it into practice in our district. And I recognize that looks different in every district.
Right.
One of the things that I challenge myself on is like, if what you are saying to me, about the way that we do things goes against best practice or the legal framework, or appropriate services for kids. And I'm highlighting the word appropriate because I think too, there's like, we talk a lot about like, there is a Cadillac and then there is like a Prius. The Prius is appropriate. It's not the Cadillac, but it's appropriate, you know? So I'm highlighting that too. Like there can be exceptions, but if what you're telling me is not appropriate for students, goes against best practice or goes against the law, but that's the way we do it,
that's a problem.
I'm concerned. That's a problem, right? So I'm always challenging myself, like, if it sounds that way, if the way they're presenting it is that way, I'm like, I'm going to reach out to my person. Who is my person that I can talk to about evaluations? Who is the person that I can talk to about speech-only students having access to other special education services? Right. Who is the person that I'm going to, you know? And so, like, those are the things that I feel like is so great in having these relationships and building them in every district that you go to, because then as you're moving into these different places and you're experiencing these different things, you have the ability to be like, hey, I'm going to push back a little. I recognize that's how you've done it, but this is what the law says. This is the guidance that I was given in the past. This is the guidance I'm being given now. Like, we maybe need to reconsider what we're doing.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And that's just a really valuable thing to have, because I think about our previous district. I think there were many people in that district that had been there for so long, never in another district, never in another position.
Yeah.
That it was, well, this is how we do it, period. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I need you to have an open mind, and I need us to be able to push back and talk about how we should do it, not the way we have done it.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, I love it. I think that's such a, and it's so funny because it, and the person I'm talking about and kind of giving kudos to, we talked about, you know, the pros and cons of every job. I mean, I'm not going to say things were like a storm. I mean, it was a storm every day, but it was like sometimes good storms and sometimes really bad ones. And so, but there's pros and cons to every job. But one thing that we agreed upon was like, we just learned so much. And I feel like we got to see literally, and he even said it, he was like, you know, like I'll have cases now that come to me and I'm like, like,
not even a big deal.
Walk in the park. Like, and so it's just so funny because I do feel like we learn so much, but then we are in that process, we are able to pick our people, because like Bailey and I had to bond over a very contentious case that's how you and I became friends, or just really good colleagues in the first place. But we
remember that this person that you're talking about eventually had to take over that case as well.
Correct. Oh,
when he moved into that role, and that was a very hard case. That was a point. It was a challenge.
Yeah. But we were able to bond over that and I think grow, you know, because we had to know. I mean, I learned
so much about that case. Like one of the things I will never forget, oh man, this was fascinating, was my my Diag at the time had been in the district for years, right? And she was like one of the old crew. And so we were going through the process of like, he had recently been evaluated. The student had for deaf and hard of hearing eligibility. He qualified. We were going to put in place services and supports and all these kind of things. And, but they didn't agree with some of the components of the ARD itself, the IEP itself. And so, we were sitting there and my dad was like, well, he's not eligible for DHH until you agree with this IEP. And we were like, I'm a brand new manager. And I'm like, well, are we sure? And she was like, yes, until they agree with the IEP, he's not eligible, because we determine eligibility in the IEP meeting. And I'm like, but we all did say, like, we agree he's eligible for this. Now we're looking at like
IEP
services and supports and what he needs. But like, we did say, are we all in agreement that this child does qualify for DHH services? Okay, cool. You know, and like, you were there, like everyone was like, we all agree. So I'm sitting there and they were like, we agree with the eligibility. We agree with the deaf and hard of hearing service. And so I had a literal fight. This Diag was in my office screaming at me because I had told the teacher of the deaf, hey, you're going to go ahead and start providing those services now.
Absolutely. Yeah. Otherwise, right, you don't comp. Yeah.
Otherwise, we're going to owe compensatory later. Right. And so I sent out that teacher of the deaf. And you know, that case took a long time for us to get to a resolution, which I'm so thankful I did, because it was like 7 months before we got to a resolution on that. And we would have owed 7 months of compensatory. And the Diag was losing it. She was like, we wouldn't owe compensatory because he wasn't eligible. And I'm like, that's not how eligibility works. And had I not been in that meeting, and like, I remember us taking a break and I went out with your senior manager at the time. And I was like, I just want to make sure that I'm doing the right thing. And she was like, Bailey, I promise you, you need to go ahead and start providing the service right now. And I was like, okay, great. If you are saying that, I'm going to trust it. Like I did. Yeah. And then of course, after, went back, looked through the legal framework, and I'm like, okay, yes. But if I had just listened to like this Diag who'd been there forever, who was that's not how we do it. We had 7 months of compensatory time, and ain't nobody going to provide that, because that child had so much compensatory time. We wouldn't have even had time to do it.
Do you remember how much was owed for academic?
Oh, what? Something crazy, like 200-300 hours?
There's no way to have made that up in school. That's the problem. I mean,
hours. He would have graduated already. Like, it was insane.
It was. I mean,
I was like, provide this dang service right now.
Good for you. Look at that.
I know.
What we need. Nope.
That's what we need. But that's because there were smart people in that room. And not that my dad wasn't smart. She was. She was just old. She had been in the district for like 30 years back in the day when they were like, yeah, if you don't agree with everything, we're not going to do anything. You don't get eligibility. And I'm just like, oh my gosh.
But you know what cracks me up is that was also the time, remember when people were like, well, if you don't agree with the evaluation, like if you don't agree with one disability, you don't get anything at all. But Bailey, it's so, that part literally, it is wild to me because of the fact that like special education, again, I know it had like IDEA wasn't that long ago, but it's still so crazy to me that that was the thought process. Like, oh, you don't agree with autism? Here, just have speech. Or nope, you don't agree with any. I'm like,
yeah.
What?
You're
what
like, hold on. Pause.
Right. Right. So, but that was like, and it's so crazy to think that that was only like 5-6 years ago.
Yeah.
I mean, truly, if you think about it, that's what the thought
that
was.
That case I remember was my first months in the job. It was 2018. That was like 6 years ago.
Yeah.
That's not long at all.
Right. But what's the funniest part too was I remember when I was there and they allowed parents to like cross out parts of the consents. Oh, you don't want that? Okay, sure. No problem.
No big deal.
Yeah.
No big deal. Even still though, like having to explain, like, and I will say this, like even in my current district and my current role, I have to explain to parents, like we are legally responsible to evaluate in all suspected areas.
Yeah.
So if we call you and we're like, hey, we did these evals, but there's also this additional thing we need, like this informed consent covers all of it.
Correct.
So if you're going to sit here and be like, no, you can't evaluate my kid for XYZ, what you're telling me is you're revoking your consent.
Correct. Absolutely.
And that's so hard because a lot of people are like, I would rather just not fight. Okay, cool. Like, I have concerns that your child has autism, or I have concerns that your child is deaf and hard of hearing, but you don't want me to evaluate for that. So I'm not going to. That's fine. And I'm like, no, that's not how this works.
I know. But that's what's so crazy. We saw so many. Like back to the statement was like, we just saw so many different cases. We trauma bond. Somebody said that last time. I forget who said that to us. We trauma bonded, but I don't look at it as trauma. I really do think it was like all learning experiences.
Yes.
A lot of the situations were certainly things that the district and us as individuals could have done better. Like a lot of the cases, I mean, the one that we're talking about specifically, I don't blame that mama. I really don't. Mm-hmm. Like we should have done better. So it's just things like that. But yeah. So I feel like we learned so much. We had our little people. We still have the same people that we go to
all the time,
which I love so much. Yeah, guys, that was literally our rant today was we wanted to give kudos and then we kind of went on to a rant. We're going to end it with positivity.
We typically do.
Yeah. So. We're going to end it with the positivity of, we are just so proud of people. I feel like that we worked with that are really doing great things for students with special needs and for their families. You know, I'm sure I think about the guy that is doing amazing stuff with that tiny home and like the life skills class. And I'm sure his parents are thrilled.
Absolutely.
That type of service. And yeah, that makes me super happy. Yeah. So keep up the good work, people. Keep
up. Yes. And thank you guys for answering my text messages when I call or I'm like, hey, quick question specifically.
Right. I always call Bailey.
I know, it
gets to the point where Bailey and I will like, we'll text each other about specific cases. And then like, if we need to call one another, we'll either be like, it's work related, not work related.
Yeah.
Like at least to know, prepare, like how much time
we need. Last week that I'm like, hey, I need to call you. It's not even work related. I don't even remember what it was. Something so dumb, but yeah.
Yeah. I was like, I'm available.
Oh, it was so funny. I don't even remember what it was, but it was something dumb. So,
yeah.
But I am available for me middle of the work day. And I'm like, this is not a work call, but I need to talk to you about it right now.
And I was like, okay, you can call me. But no, we do it all the time. And it's just nice to be able to have people that you can like bounce off things to, that will actually go look up stuff with you just to make sure you guys are both not crazy. So really grateful for that. But yeah, keep up the good work, guys. Thanks for listening to our podcast today. If you have a special education story, you can email us at spedories@spedories@gmail.com. You can find us on TikTok and Instagram. You can DM us on there if you don't want to email us. And Bailey, where can they find us or where can they listen to us?
You can listen to our podcast on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. Wherever you listen to your podcast. I recently found out that most people use Spotify and I'm the weird one that uses Apple, but I prefer Apple. It is what it is. I don't know what to say, but
I'm a Spotify girl. So yeah.
Everybody's like Spotify. And I'm like, I use Apple, but all right, that's fine. Either one.
Fine. It's okay. We don't judge here. But thanks guys so much for listening. We'll talk to you guys in 2 weeks. We'll see you later.
Yay.